This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week, with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Matt George joins us. I believe I'm going to hit, what button? This button? Yeah, he joined us in a sleeveless shirt.
Sleeveless shirt.
Some green juice.
The guns are out.
Some jewelry. He's got his glasses on. He's drinking green juice, and he is. He's. Who are you? As Halloween today.
Hi, I'm Damian Barley. I'm D'Lo and Casey. Bunch of jackasses, all you. Bunch of jackasses. I'm just a broadcast journalist. I hate fun. All right. I went to Disneyland. Okay. I went to Disneyland. I only had a good time because Katie was there. Disneyland sucked. It was fine, but it was sucked. I hate Mad Torch. The other station. Oh, at the other station. At the other station. You never. You know what they like at the other station? Aaron Rodgers. They like Aaron Rodgers at the other station. Jackass. I hate Aaron Rodgers.
All right, man.
Okay. As it's the hottest costume of Halloween. Everybody's D-Lo. That's how you know he's a star, man. That's how you know he's a star.
Oh, man.
Spirit Halloween was crying. On at Kenny Garraway.
I can't believe you said I hated Disneyland and only had fun because Katie was there. Oh, my.
She likes The Office. I was watching The Office. No, this is good.
Is that really my thing? Do I say that a lot?
A bunch of children.
Oh, that's a quotable. That's a D-Lo quotable.
Oh, man.
This juice is made from my lawn, my front lawn. This is my grass on my front lawn that I blended up. I was up at 3 a.m. this morning working out. I went to bed at 8 p.m. because I'm a child. Left the Kings game at halftime. Don't matter. I don't care.
Oh, my God. Come on, man. Wow. Oh,
man.
Oh, my gosh.
It's low-key good, by the way. Whatever this is good.
I am crying. Okay. Whew. All right, Matt. That was funny. Matt. You win.
Don't call me Matt. I'm not Matt. I don't like that guy.
No, that's not true.
Wouldn't play Prince songs when I wanted it.
Well, it was once. It was a long time ago, Matt. It was like 9 years ago. It's fine.
I like Sean Payton.
Stop saying that. Now you got to stop doing that.
That's crazy.
Oh, man.
Sean Payton.
Said I go to bed at 8 because I'm a child. Goodness gracious. All right, oh, Matt. You got a legit laugh out of me. That's funny.
Happy Halloween, guys.
No, that's.
I was so pissed. I found out, like, Kyle. They said Kyle dressed up as Damian. It's like, well, damn it. There goes my bit.
Oh, man. Okay. You got me, Matt. That was very funny. You got me. That's funny. Matt George.
You're onto something with this green juice, though. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. Well, where did you get it from?
I don't know. It's just naked green machine somehow.
Oh, yeah. There's probably a bunch of fruit and good stuff in there. So that's good stuff. Matt George, Locked On Kings, ABC 10 with us here. Matt, I guess this is our first time talking since the season started, right? Yeah, last time we talked, it was opening night. Team's now 4-4. They're headed to Atlanta. Overall, Matt, we've kind of been of the opinion, like even with a 2-2 record, not that you know we're celebrating that, but overall it feels like the Kings played pretty well in all four of those games.
Yeah, I mean, you can essentially look at the four games and go, you lost close games to two good teams, and then you dominated two teams you're supposed to beat, which arguably, it's funny because you see whether it's fans of other teams or interactions that you have on social media, and it's people going, oh yeah, you only beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And in Sacramento, that's a big deal. That's a good thing compared to how this team struggled over the last couple of seasons with bad teams. So I think you should overall feel more positive than negative. There are certainly some things that are concerning, but I don't think there's any, like there's ways to look at how the Kings struggled throughout those first two games and say they could obviously get better. And then you look at how the Kings struggled and say, okay, I don't know how much it could get worse, right? And the offense itself it shouldn't be falling off a cliff for any reason. There's nothing that they're doing offensively that isn't sustainable. And in fact, it can improve. You can improve upon it by the 3-point shooting too. So like it was the first two games, I was a little bothered by those two runs that happened in those two games. I mean, 21-0 run, even if LeBron James looks like he's 28 years old again, that can't happen. You can't give up 44 points in the fourth quarter, regardless of who you're playing. That could never happen. So I was a little bothered after that. But what I liked is that the words that De'Aaron Fox and Kevin Huerter used after the Portland game that they also carried into the Utah game that I think is actually like a key to the success of this team this season is they played desperate and they didn't allow their opponent to outwork them. And that second part, the not allowing themselves to get outworked, like that is how this team can be the best version of themselves. Doesn't mean they're going to win every single night because shots have to fall and certain things, the ball might not bounce your way. But if the Kings refuse to let anybody outwork them, this is kind of what Mike Brown was preaching all preseason, right? If they crash the boards continuously over the course of a 48-minute game to where it exhausts their opponents, if they get out and transition to a point where it exhausts their opponent, you're almost like stealing the heart and soul, or you're taking the wind out of their sails. Just exhaust them, like beat them up almost in that sense. So if the Kings refuse to let any team outwork them, they should handle their business against the bad teams, and they should be competitive against any good team to great team in the league.
Now, see, I agree with everything you're saying, and I look at it like this. I think they're going to end up just beating the hell out of these bad teams a lot of the times. Obviously, you're going to have these games where it's going to be a close one, or they'll lose a game against a team they should. But for the most part, because of the way they go about their business on the offensive end, and I think what's going on the defensive end, especially when you can get Keon Ellis involved in there, I think it's the real deal. I think they're going to just kind of suffocate these teams that don't have the talent to match up with them, especially on the offensive end. And I think they're not only going to win these games against teams that are lesser than them. I think it's going to be kind of like what we saw against Portland and Utah on a regular basis.
I love the word that you use, suffocate. And I think you used that word yesterday too. And that's exactly how that Utah game went. Because the Jazz got off to a good start in that game. Mm-hmm. And then the Kings built a double-digit lead. And then the Jazz started the second quarter and got that double-digit lead down to like 4 or 3. And then the Kings built it back up to like 9 or 10 mm-hmm. and a half. And then the Jazz got off to a good start in the third quarter. This was after Lauri Markkanen went out. And they got it to within like 7 or 6 or 5. Like they're in the realm of it. Mm-hmm. Could potentially come back and make a game of it. And then the Kings put that game away, right? And I look at it in twofold. One, like you weathered the storm. That's a sign of a good team. You weathered the storm on the road at home. Doesn't matter. You weathered the storm. But the second part of that too is, Casey, kind of going back to what I was talking about earlier. Like, remember when the Warriors would do that to the Kings? Remember when all these teams that would do that to Sacramento, to where the Kings would have? Like, think about the third quarter of the Timberwolves game to open up the season. Mm-hmm. Kings dominate for basically the entire quarter. right? They build a big lead. We're feeling good. And all that hard work is erased like that. Just gone. One big run. And this was the Warriors' specialty when Mike Brown was there as an assistant coach.
Right.
You would be beating the Warriors for 35 minutes and be up double digits on them. And they'd hit, Steph would hit three threes in the span of 45 seconds, and it's a one-point game where the Warriors have the lead. And that was just exhausting. And I look at how the Sacramento Kings are trying to crash the offensive glass, and I think back to how many times has Josh Hart grabbed so many offensive rebounds against the Kings to where you would hear, like, think back to the playoffs, Kevon Looney, and the amount of second chance opportunities he opened up to where the crowd was audibly groaning, like, oh, my, like that frustration. Players feel that frustration too. So if the Kings can be that kind of team that suffocates their opponents, that frustrates them, that just keeps making those big plays and keeps doing those little things to where it, again, like takes the wind out of your opponent's sails, like winning the mental game as well as the physical game.
Yeah.
I think that can be a key to success for Sacramento.
What do you, you did a podcast with Will Z yesterday.
Yeah.
Kind of breaking down, to steal your words, kind of what's real and what's not here with what we've seen from the Kings so far through four games. What really stood out to you in your conversations with the stat god, Will Z?
Well, other than that, Will is phenomenal, and he's just, he's great. And he also introduced me to his new, like, spreadsheet that he's doing, which you guys should check out on
Crazy,
Twitter,
right? Yeah.
It's dense, but what I told him that I love about it is we get, so as media, we get these media guides every time we go to games, and they have all these numbers since the dawn of time. And you have to know where to look and how to look. And even if you go to NBA.com, all the numbers you want are there. You just have to search through the 10 billion categories to try and find it. Mm-hmm. Will puts it all on one page for you. So it looks overwhelming, but if you know what to find, it's there for you. Will does a phenomenal job with that. He does that all by himself. So one, Will is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Two, like, look, four games is a small sample size, but I host a daily podcast talking about the Kings. What the hell you want me to do?
That's what we got
to
do, baby.
We got to break down what we've seen.
Yep.
So we've seen great stuff. We've seen some not so great stuff. What do we think is real? What do we think is not? A great example is Domantas Sabonis is leading the Kings in scoring through four games. Domantas Sabonis is shooting over 50% from three-point range through four games. So we could talk about like what's real and what's not. And I don't think Domas is going to shoot over 50% from three-point range this season. I don't think De'Aaron Fox is going to shoot over 90% from the free throw line this season like he's currently doing. Mm-hmm. But what's real, I think, is Sabonis has this newfound understanding of how he can attack and be more aggressive offensively and score and when to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And De'Aaron, plus the Sacramento Kings in general, have found that while they aren't going to be the best free throw shooting team in the NBA, I guess, I don't imagine you're going to go from worst to best in one year. That's one hell of a swing. But the Kings can carry themselves through portions of games like that first half against Portland, where that game felt like it was being played in the freaking mud. That game had no rhythm. The fouls were ridiculous. Like, it was an ugly basketball game. And yet the Kings maintained and sustained a lead pretty much the entire time because they hit like 17 or 18 free throws in the first half. And then their offense finally got going in the third quarter. So I guess taking from my conversation with Will and looking at the numbers, those two things right there, Domantas Sabonis' scoring and the Kings' free throw shooting, is something that is off to a great start now that even if it comes down to earth or back down to earth a little bit, it's not going to plummet to where it was. Mm-hmm. It's sustainable. What the Sacramento Kings are getting out of these guys and their free throw shooting is sustainable. And that was kind of the takeaway that we had from most of the good things about what the Kings have been doing, especially offensively. Nothing that they're doing is out of their mind. They're not shooting 55% from three every night. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Right.
They're shooting fine. They can shoot better. And their offense looks this good. So pretty much everything that the Kings are doing right, it can still get better at times, and it's sustainable, I feel.
What do you think about the defensive end? Do you, like, because I think there's numbers that point to them, you know, being a really good defensive team. You kind of watch them, and they look like they've improved on the defensive end. Do you think that's just a small sample size, or are you kind of buying that they're a better defensive team than they were a year ago, or that people are even giving them credit for right now?
I think, again, it falls into this, like, smothering your opponents or taking the wind out of their sails. The Sacramento Kings are not going to shut anybody down, I don't think. But deflections, the high deflection rate, very, very light, like, very possible to continue. The Kings are forcing a ton of turnovers. Like every single team the Kings are playing, and this goes back to the preseason too, they're turning the ball over a lot. Now, I'm interested to see if that trend continues once we get out of the early stages of the season and teams get more settled in a little bit, if that trend kind of goes down a little bit. But if Sacramento can be disruptive, that's the word. If they can be disruptive by deflecting passes, even if the pass still gets through or they don't turn the ball over, but they just deflect passes. And Kevin Herter's been doing a fantastic job of this, by the way. Or force turnovers and use that to get out in transition. Or at the very least, do what Mike Brown has been asking for years, which is guard with your chest. Don't guard with your arms, guard with your chest. What does that do? If I guard with my chest, you now have to work harder to go through me instead of going past me or around me. You got to work harder. If the Kings can just make a team work harder on the offensive end, then they're going to be better, I think, baseline. They're still going to struggle defensively. They're still going to have their issues. They got to find a way to clean up these big runs that they're allowing teams to go on that are still happening. And that was a problem from last year.
Yeah.
But I think, again, what we're seeing on the defensive end in terms of the disruption, the deflections, the hustle. I think Kevin Herter's been playing fantastic defense over the last two games, and he's been doing it by not playing out of his mind, but just doing what the team has been asking him to do, which is guard with his chest. And then you have Keon Ellis, who, honestly, the biggest concern that I have to start this season, guys, is Mike Brown's comments before the Portland game saying that Keon is going to be a situational rotation player. How? Every time the guy plays, he's impactful. Something happens. And you look at his stat lines, and maybe he's not scoring more than 3 or 4 points, but you'll typically see one or two steals, a block. You'll see a high or a low defensive rating, which lower is better in defensive rating. Like that, Keon just gets stuff done. So I think this Kings team is loaded with players that on the defensive end can just get stuff done. They won't be a great defensive team. They won't shut anybody down. But they have the capability to be disruptive, and that can be good enough with the offense to make you a good to great team in the West.
Man, there was a lot there talking about the defensive. No, this is it's good stuff. Let's center on Keon for a second, because I know the situational thing kind of raised a lot of eyebrows because obviously of what he did last year. It feels like, you know, Mike has kind of gotten. And this is the way it should be, and hopefully this is the way that the next couple of games look, is the Kings got up 20-plus on Portland. They got up 20-plus on Utah. And Mike talked a lot about rotations, and he's got to figure out his rotations and how to do certain things. And you can do different rotations when you're up 20.
Right.
And I wonder if just getting Keon out there on the floor and giving Mike, I know it sounds crazy, a reminder of what Keon can do out there. Yeah, maybe that does change the situational thing into, yeah, we probably do need to get Keon out there. He could do some things for us on the defensive end in small spurts. And as Keith Smith pointed out when he was with us earlier, what the Kings do on the offensive end is probably not going to lack with Keon out there. You're not going to be asking Keon to do a ton offensively. He's got to do a lot, in my opinion, of what Keith said Keegan's got to do. Defend and hit the open shot.
Yeah.
We know Keon's capable of hitting the open shot. He just doesn't get as many as everybody else.
Right. Look, you're starting this season, and your big threes, they're all averaging 20-plus points per game. And I don't think that's absurd to believe. I think that's going to be necessary throughout a vast majority of the season, because if we're being honest, like, the Kings don't have a ton of offensive depth. At the top, they're extremely offensively gifted. But when you get into past, like, Malik Monk, The depth offensive rotation is not great. I mean, Keon is over 40% three-point shooter, so he can space the floor. Trey Lyles is probably the best other offensive option that the Sacramento Kings can have, but we know it can be kind of come and go. Plus, Trey is being asked to play kind of an enforcer role. Trey is being asked to crash the glass a lot and be kind of aggressive offensively. So Trey's being asked to do a lot in addition to space the floor and score. Then after that, I mean, Jordan McLaughlin, Alex Len, like these are guys that play a role. Doug McDermott is a straight scorer, but I don't think he's going to play regularly enough to make that big of an offensive impact, right? For the most part, outside of the top six of this roster, they're not known for their offense, which is fine. So that's where I don't buy any sort of concern about Keon's offense in his playing time.
Mm-hmm.
And funny enough, I'm using Mike Brown's words there. Because if you go back to preseason and training camp, Mike Brown is the one to point out,
yeah, Keon Ellis works because Keon Ellis doesn't require the shots that these other guys require. Mm. Again, like to me, from Mike Brown's words and Mike Brown's actions don't always mix. And I know Mike Brown is an incredibly bright man and an incredibly bright coach. I also think Mike is playing the game a little bit. And I think back to before the Golden State Warriors playoff series, the amount of times we were at, this is like Chris Biederman's thing with the sack B. The amount of times we would ask Mike, hey, do you feel like you have any kind of advantage because you know this team so well? Mike would downplay it all the time. Nope. I'm just, they're a great coach. I'm focused on the Kings. No. And then like Biederman would kind of ask him a follow-up, or when we'd get out of the scrum, Biederman would say like, really, coach, really? And Mike would kind of give him kind of a smile and a little slap on the back or something like that. I think Mike's kind of playing the game a little bit too. I think Mike knows he has egos to manage. I think he knows that Kevin Herter is a...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Very important piece of this team and wants to make sure that Kevin feels like Kevin has a place here and that he can get Kevin back to the confidence that Herter had 2 years ago. I think he also knows how valuable Keon Ellis is just a throw him in there and kind of let him go and kind of Tasmanian devil almost in that sense. So I think Mike is playing the game a little bit, balancing some things a little bit, but I don't see a scenario. Like, to me, Keon Ellis not playing in the Laker game is inexcusable. If Keon played, does LeBron not go on a 21-0 run or 16-0 run by himself? No. Like, Keon's not stopping LeBron James. So I'm not saying they lost the game because Keon didn't play, but what's the point of having this piece that fits so well with what we believe the Mike Brown style to be, and you don't put him in there?
You know what's funny about what you just did? You can't tell me LeBron didn't score all 21 of those points.
Felt like it.
Like, we credit it. Yeah, it was a Lakers 21-0 run. It sure as hell felt like it was a LeBron 21-0 run. Shout out Anthony Davis, who was perfect in that quarter, too.
Yeah, AD needs to buy LeBron a drink for helping him end that streak. I know AD hit that big three, and it was a hell of a shot because Sabonis closed out on that three actually perfectly. It was a hell of a shot that AD hit that three to kind of ice it. Although the Kings were still in it after that. But LeBron got them back into that game. When De'Aaron Fox hit that look-away pull-up three to end the third quarter, I thought, like, oh, you just stole the heart out of LA.
Yep.
That was cold. Jason Anderson got a video of that. If you haven't seen it, go and look at Jason Anderson's video. That ball is just starting its arc, and Fox is turning around and walking up the court. Oh, nasty work.
Yeah. So, but you mentioned, and I was thinking the same thing before you mentioned it. You know, if Keon plays in that Lakers game, I'm not even sure. Well, he Mike talked about it after, and that added fuel to the fire as well. But if he plays 10 minutes in that game, it doesn't feel like we're having this discussion. And I'll give Mike a little leeway. Like, when you talk about playing the game, I'll give him a little leeway where in that...
That video's nasty. I just saw it for the first time. That video is nasty. He's shooting it from the opposite side, so you see the back of De'Aaron. You see the ball in the air, and De'Aaron, oh, that is nasty, J.A.
Can you put it up on the screen?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Bring up all screens.
Give me a second. Give me a second as I interrupted Casey there talking, but let me pull up Jason Anderson. That's a good call. I don't know how I missed this video. Jason. Oh. Yeah, Jason kind of bodied this one.
See.
Perfect
see,
angle.
See.
I thought for sure.
Steph Curry King does that, and it's all over the place.
Yep. Right?
It's the same thing.
Right? Hold on.
It's amazing when Steph does it, too, but it's just,
Bad. Not ready. I'm not prepared, Matthew.
That's okay.
You could work that into next year's impersonation. I'm unprepared. Nope, ignore that. Now I'm just pressing buttons, Matt.
I don't know how to run my show. I don't know technology.
Thank you. I think you're not.
I'm just a broadcast journalist.
That's it. That's it.
It's the Aaron Rodgers of computers. I hate it.
Oh,
Here's Fox's 3 from J.A.'s view for those who hadn't seen it. Ooh.
Ah. Oh. Nasty.
Yuck, yuck.
Runner, I'm sorry, man. We're going to watch it one more time. Bop, bop. Turn around.
Yuck, yuck.
Come on, man. You don't mess it. With this
he
boy.
You knew it.
Mess with that boy. Man, De'Aaron's cold.
Yeah, I thought that's... the game was over when he hit that, too.
Yeah, I thought so. LeBron said, nope, we're not doing that.
Set up LeBron James real quick. But what I was saying about Keon, though, and Mike playing the game and talking the way he talks, it was the second game of the season. You signed this guy, Jordan McLaughlin. Let me see him real quick. Let me see him. You know what I mean? And I don't think there's ever going to be, shouldn't say ever, but more times than not, it's going to be tough to get both Keon and McLaughlin in a regular game, like not a blowout, right? So second game of the season, I played Keon in the opening night. I didn't play Jordan. Let me see what Jordan's got. And I think that might have been where Keon's minutes went that particular night. And it just so happened, Kings lost. Keon got no minutes. But I say all that to say, maybe Keon's part of this. He's part of the rotation. He is part of the rotation. Mike just had to get Jordan in there to see what it looked like real quick. And maybe he didn't like it and is ready to go back to what he was doing.
And this is like one of the things I genuinely believe with Mike, I genuinely believe over the first week of this season, he's had a hard time with his minutes sheet. And he's talked about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know nobody wanted DeMar DeRozan to play 40-plus minutes that first game. Keegan to play 40-plus minutes. I think he kind of did that out of desperation of, I don't really know my roster because of all the injuries and stuff. But I'm just of the belief, like, I know you have a log jam of guards. Like, and I think a fun question to ask, too, and I posed this actually to the media before, I think it was the Portland game, and I'll ask it to you guys. Like, if Devin Carter was healthy right now, completely healthy, went through all of training camp, is Devin Carter in this rotation?
No, I don't think
If you're having this hard of a time with Keon and Kevin and everything, like, how is Devin Carter in this spot? My response to what you said, Casey, it makes complete sense, and it was a one game and one off out of 82, so it's really not that big of a deal. I don't think Keon Ellis, one of your most known commodities on the defensive end, is the guy that you should be playing with his minutes to get a look at somebody else. But you're sure as hell not taking the minutes from Fox. You're not taking it from Monk. Like, I get all that. I just think, like, sorry, Jordan. Like, if I can't find enough guard minutes, I'm not taking him away from Keon. Because I just know you can rely on Keon every single night to make the right play on defense, which is what this team, I think, needs more of. So that's just my feel on the situation.
Can I steal some of your thunder?
Nah, absolutely.
Can I ask a different question?
Please.
If Monty had drafted Dalton Connect, would he be getting minutes?
Yes.
Because he can hit a shot. Like, he's not shooting at like a crazy clip where you're like, whoa, but he is shooting to where it's like, huh, okay.
And we knew in the draft this kid was nice. Like, I don't think anybody knew, like, you never know how a shooter is going to translate.
And he's like 40. That's like right up Monty McNair's alley, isn't it? Hey, that's a grown ass man. Yeah.
Just why to the Lakers? Like, how does he fall to the Lakers? That pissed me off.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know where Devin Carter plays.
Yeah.
I don't think he plays above Keon Ellis. Maybe in certain lineups, maybe. When you have Trey Lyles at the five, you go with Devin off the bench as a backup three. But I don't know where those minutes come from.
Yeah, you're going small. Devin has to be like a eye opening defender and rebounder to the point where you're just like, God, I can't keep him off the floor.
Which is what he was in college. But, you know, we'll see how that happens in the pros. Yeah, I don't know where he plays, though.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But are you confident? You talked about the Kings being able to hit, you know, as runs happen in these games, they happen in the Portland. Obviously, they happened with the most negative consequences in the Timberwolves game and the Lakers game. They happened with a little bit less consequences in the other two games. And I asked you, do you think DeMar is a big part of the reason that was able to calm down, chill out?
No, in the sense that I think we talked about it this offseason. During those runs where I was looking for DeMar to be kind of the guy to stop it or help the Kings kind of put an end to that. Like, okay, the Lakers are on a 14-0 run or whatever. DeMar, go and get us a bucket and settle things down. Or the T-Wolves are on this big 20-7 run to get back in the game. DeMar, go and get us a bucket to slow things down. And DeMar tried, and I thought at times forced up some pretty kind of crappy shots. Now, I think he was also trying to draw fouls, which he's been an unbelievable master at so far to start this season. One thing you can expect from Kings games are going to go on average 30 minutes longer a night now because DeMar DeRozan, because how much he draws.
He's going to be at the foul line.
Yeah. So I wouldn't point to DeMar. I think there's a feeling out process. And I honestly think too, I think the biggest issue that Mike Brown has to still figure out, and I don't know if the answer is on this roster, because I don't know if the answer exists outside of a guy in Denver. When Domantas Sabonis comes off the floor, this team has to figure out something different. Like, and it's not that Fox and DeRozan aren't reliable in that spot, but the Kings run their offense so specifically through and with Sabonis' skill set that when Sabonis is not out there, and this is not, I'm blaming Alex Len. I don't think there's only one guy in the league that can do what Domantas Sabonis does, and he's a three-time MVP. Like, I think those runs are happening, and the Kings are having these scoring lulls at times, I think, when Sabonis is coming out of the game. So it's figuring out kind of how to get through and be able to maintain yourself offensively through the 15 or so minutes a night that Sabonis needs to get a break, because he's already playing damn near the entire first quarter.
Mm. Hey, Matt, we were talking today about Keegan Murray and his numbers of 14 points per game, 7 rebounds. A lot of people had expectations for him to elevate his game even more. He had 15 points per game last year. We're like, oh, he might be 17, 18, 19 point per game score. I ask you the same question I ask everybody else. If his numbers stay where they are, 14 and 7 for the year, are you okay with that?
100%. There is nothing that Keegan Murray is doing wrong right now. He's taking the toughest defensive assignment, whether it's a guard or a forward. Keegan's taking that assignment. Keegan Murray is making the right play with the basketball, and nobody has embraced the offensive rebounding initiative better than Keegan Murray has. The words he uses, reckless abandon. That man is flying to crash the offensive glass to the point where he had an offensive rebound against Portland. And honestly, truth be told, I still don't know. You guys might be able to help me with this, or the chatty house will. Should ask Will Z this. Like, if you bat a ball out, are you credited with an offensive rebound, or do you bat it out to someone and whoever takes the possession gets the offensive rebound? Because I don't know if Keegan was credited for this, but against Portland, he went flying in amongst three Trailblazers, including DeAndre Ayton, bats the ball out to, I think, Malik Monk for a wide open three, and Malik Monk cashed it. Is that an offensive rebound for Keegan or an assist?
I think it's something for that. I think it's at the discretion of the person who's keeping score that night.
Well, give it to Keegan every time.
Great.
Because I think there's
arguments. That old Jaren Jackson stat collector again.
There's arguments for both. Like that, I've seen that as Keegan Murray's offensive rebound. I've seen that as Malik Monk's offensive rebound. You know what I mean? I think.
Yeah.
What constitutes a team rebound? Okay.
I have no idea. Somebody's got to get the rebound.
Isn't team rebounds? Is that a thing? Did I just make that up? I thought that was a thing. Maybe it's not. What do I know? I'm not even. I'm a broadcast journalist. This way. That's what.
Now
I wasn't even watching the second half. I was in bed. I was asleep. I went home. I leave at halftime. I got to watch The Office.
Now the level of control
of
the tip. Like if it was a controlled tip out by Keegan, they may say he had an offensive rebound and he knowingly tipped the ball to Malik Monk. Might even give him an assist on that.
Mm.
But it's a lot of times it's up to interpretation.
New stat, rebound, assist, basket. Let's go, baby.
There you go.
Either way, to answer your question, Casey, there's nothing that Keegan Murray is playing winning basketball. Mm. Like that's how I look at it. And I can kind of say the same thing about De'Aaron Fox. Like Fox's shooting percentages haven't been the best, and really it's his 3-point shooting that's dragging his percentages down. But De'Aaron Fox being number three out of the big three in points per game right now is not concerning to me. Maybe it's concerning in terms of if he'll be able to actually truly win all NBA and become a supermax eligible player. Like I don't think the numbers are good enough for that. But he had 11 assists in game one and 10 assists in game two. He's still playing great defense. He had phenomenal defense, I thought, against Colin Sexton in Utah the other night. So I think both De'Aaron, what we're seeing is the Kings are very clearly offensively emphasizing early on getting DeRozan involved, DeMontis Sabonis, his new like aggressive trying to score initiative, and getting Kevin Huerter comfortable. Keegan Murray and De'Aaron Fox, I feel in a lot of ways, have kind of filled into a not a support role suggests they're being passive or it's not, they're making the right plays. I just feel consistently both those guys are making the right plays. So I have no issues with the numbers that they're putting up. And certainly if Keegan has a 14 point and like, what do you say? 7 rebound night or 8 rebound night and 4 of them are offensive, especially when you go to second chance points against Utah and you see 24 second chance points and they converted 11 of 12 second chance opportunities. Yeah, Keegan Murray's directly responsible or directly involved in that, and he doesn't get the individual credit for it. I'm 100% okay with how he's playing.
Mm. Concerned at all about De'Aaron's finger?
No, because De'Aaron perpetually plays banged up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't remember a time where De'Aaron was completely healthy, genuinely. And mm-hmm. I also think this is one of the reasons why we see more of a reliance on De'Aaron's 3-point shot, because every time he goes to the rim, dude gets clobbered. So I'm not too concerned. If he starts telling me it's a problem, or if we start seeing that like something's really off, or the Kings start like limiting his minutes or talking about, hey, we might need to rest him tonight because of it, the alarm bells will go off a little bit more.
Mm.
But I've known an entire career of De'Aaron Fox playing through something, and he's still been great. So at this point, no, but something to monitor for sure.
Okay. All right, we got Atlanta coming up, Toronto coming up, and Miami, who's certainly a little bit of a tougher squad. You're confident in the way this team is playing that they should come back feeling good after this road trip?
If they keep approaching every game with this desperation, and maybe not as desperate anymore because they've gotten a couple wins under their belt, but if they keep approaching every game with the not going to get outworked mindset,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to win a majority of these games and come back home with a winning record.
Matt, you made me laugh today. You made me laugh. I appreciate you.
No, this is good. This is good. This is good.
Clearly, I have to stop saying that because that made the rounds today. So I have to do better with that. Matt George, ABC 10, Locked On Kings.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.